and welcome to Connections Radio Show, where we talk about ideas that matter. I'm glad you've made the connection and are with us today. I'm Lori Fitz, your host, and the goal of our show is to explore a wide range of topics that challenge us to see ourselves, our community, and the world around us in ways that get us connected and perhaps inspired or challenged to do just a bit more because we made the connection. We have Rick Bernardo, my co-host today. Welcome, Rick.
That's still me. Good morning.
Rick, you have brought a guest for us today. Oh, two guests.
Well,
or your guest has brought a guest.
There's sort of a virtual crowd, too, because we have from recordings from some other guests. But it starts with Ann Sawyer, whom I knew from In the Heart of the Beast Theater, working there for a few years. And I first saw a little setup in the lobby at the theater for Nala and the Pink Tiger, mm-hmm. which is like people are saying, what is that? But some of them know what that is because it was a puppetry story theater thing that she did for all ages, but also a book, an amazing book, because she's not only a writer and an artist and a puppetress, but she was on Chicks on Sticks, which is actually stilts, and she's got so many talents. So good morning, Ann.
Oh, thank you for that introduction. And I'd also like to welcome our other guest, Tricia, who is part of the project that we're going to be talking about today.
Yes.
And today we're talking about the Southeast Seniors Project. It's about a memoir that folks could be working on with you, Anne, that has turned into a book and will also be part of a podcast. So we get to talk to you before even the podcast comes out.
That's right. You guys get a sneak preview of the content of both the podcast and the book.
And as you heard from Rick's introduction, Anne is an artist and a writer and a teacher and a loving person that has joined our show a couple times, and we're glad you're back. So memoir writing. Tell me about how this all got started, because I know you do a variety of teaching. How did you come to work with the Southeast Seniors to help them create their memoirs?
Well, Southeast Seniors has a special place in my heart because my mother volunteered for it for many years. Her name is Sally Sawyer. And she, where I grew up in Prospect Park. So that's in Southeast Minneapolis there, in the Witch's Tower, and went to Pratt School. And I think it was in 2020, maybe 2021, my mom sent me something saying, they're looking for art teachers. And so I approached Betsy Snyder, who was then the executive director, and she and I talked a little bit, and we concocted this project of the memoir writing classes.
And just to pause there, I hear, 2020, which is an interesting time and space continuum.
Oh, my goodness.
Right in the thick of COVID, where there's isolation mm-hmm. and unknowns. And what better way to bring people together is to be thinking about how do we share our stories.
Right. Yeah. When we were designing the project, because, when you have to write a grant, you have to have a long lead time. Mm-hmm. We weren't sure what was going to happen. We didn't know whether these classes would be in person or through Zoom. And that was also because I could have done a visual art project, mm-hmm. but we thought that if we are forced to do this via Zoom, writing might be a little bit easier for some people to access mm-hmm. for a variety of reasons.
So tell us a little bit about what you had proposed.
Well, we wanted to do memoir writing so that people could share some of their memories and leave a legacy for their family and friends. Also because people who have reached a certain age have a lot of stories and a lot of things to share, all that experience. Mm-hmm. And it's just about helping them to shape that so that it can live and sing on the page. And so we decided that we would make a book and also a podcast series. And I brought in a friend of mine, Barry Mador, who is a sound wizard. And he does work with I've worked with him more recently at Teatro del Pueblo. They have a podcast called Coco's Barrio. And so I was a production coordinator for that theater for a while. And so when I said to Barry, would you be interested in helping with this project? He was like, yes, right away. He was so excited. And he really was wonderful with everybody. He just put people at their ease, and he's so good at what he does. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that podcast piece with everybody.
Wonderful. And you have brought a guest.
Yes, Tricia Keir. We're going to hear some of her work, which is a great example of that legacy writing, you know, that sharing a memory. And Tricia, do you want to talk a little bit about your experience in participating in the class?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Tricia. We're glad you're here.
I live in Prospect Park, and I would often get the flyers in my mailbox about Southeast Seniors. And when I first started to get them, I wasn't quite a senior. But I would always look at it and read through it and think, yeah, you know, I might like to join this group and look into it. And then there was the day that I looked at it and I saw that they were offering a square dance class. So that's when I first got involved, taking the square dance class. I had been in a conversation a few weeks prior with a good friend of mine who was going to renew her wedding vows. Mm. And they were going to do a cowgirl theme. And I said to them, well, you got to have a square dance. And 2-3 days later, I get this flyer about this square dance class. And I'm thinking, I'm going to learn the square dance and I'm going to teach the whole wedding party to square dance when they renew their vows.
I love it. And did you?
So I joined the class. No, they haven't renewed their vows yet.
Oh, okay.
I joined the class.
No rush.
And I learned to square dance. Oh. It brought back a lot of memories because I used to do that in grade school, square dancing. And so that's how I first got involved. And then when it came time to do the memoirs class, I love to write. And so I jumped on that opportunity also.
And would you like us to play that piece now?
Yes, we're going to play an excerpt from Tricia's, one of her pieces that's in the book and the podcast called Long Visit to Minnesota.
June 1982. For the first time in over 4 years, I went to visit my father, who was very ill. He had been a smoker and was suffering from emphysema. We hadn't spoken in a very long time. He was ashamed of me. I was single with 3 children. My father had always wanted a grandson named after him. He had 5 daughters, no sons. Between my 4 older sisters, there were 12 grandsons. No namesake for my father. I had named my youngest son Robert. This was the first time they would meet. We spent the weekend with my father. He was too weak to hold my son, but he got to see and meet Robbie and my older son Corey. We talked that weekend, my father and me. I apologized for being a disappointment to him. I believe he forgave me. I was going to come back the next weekend. I wanted him to see my sons, his grandsons, get to know them and their little personalities. We went home on Sunday afternoon. My father passed away on Wednesday. I was thankful for the weekend we had together. God had allowed him to meet his namesake. He was pleased with that.
Patricia, for sharing such a beautiful story.
It's wonderful. Oh.
Did you feel, when you were writing the memoir, a sense of peace in being able to share that story?
I think that I wrote that piece to kind of set myself free. Mm-hmm. Hearing it for the first time, it's a sad story,
yeah.
But it did kind of set me free, because I've held those emotions inside, and so it was freeing to talk about it and let it go. Yeah,
that's what art can do. Art has a transformative power. And it helps heal and save lives and also just help you live life.
And Tricia, when I was listening, I've listened three times so far. Who's counting? But things free up in me. I mean, I'm moved and there's emotions, sad and gratitude, all of that. I mean, I identify. I mean, I wasn't your life, but that's what the sharing did for me. It freed up some things. So thanks.
Go ahead. And in listening to it, hearing it, you know, saying that I apologize to him for being a disappointment, I really don't feel like I was a disappointment to myself.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I was to him. And so because we had not seen each other and spoken for such a long time, I wanted to make peace with him. So it was about him at that moment.
That's exactly what I got out of it.
Yeah,
it wasn't a piece that you needed as a forgiveness for him. You needed for him to be at peace as well. And that was a freedom. I thought that was very beautiful.
There is so much wisdom in even dawning on us that people live in different worlds of experience. And to be able to acknowledge that for that. Their world is not mine. It's not bad, but even to be able to get that a little bit is quite profound.
I also love that your love of your children came through in such a beautiful way.
Their little personalities.
Their little personalities and how you wanted that joy for your father. And even if it was just a short period of time, I imagine from what you were saying that he did experience that.
Yeah.
That he did experience that connection to them and that joy of having his namesake.
Yeah.
And to be able to be family for an afternoon and create that connection.
Yeah.
To me, it was very peaceful. It was a peaceful sharing of a saying goodbye that you didn't know you were saying goodbye. But what a beautiful way to let someone go is to have that.
Yeah, I was really grateful that I had that weekend with him and, you know, we got to say some things that needed to be said that we had both held in for many years and we got some things explained. I was expecting to come back, you know, the next weekend and I was going to bring him a couple of gifts but, you know, God had a different plan.
Yeah.
But we made peace, and he got to see his grandsons run around and play.
And that was such a great gift.
That
was the greatest gift, is the experience, the memories that then could be shared in a memoir. And your experience, Anne, in having these wonderful moments in people's lives be shared, and that you're helping to create that access piece so that they can be shared, how does it feel for you?
It feels amazing. I was blown away by the writing that everyone did. In 4 short weeks, we had 2 classes, 2 groups, and each group met for just 4 weeks. And in 4 weeks, I saw their writing go from, you know, good writing to amazing writing, where just I was touched by not only the honesty and the realness, I guess. I don't know how else to put it, but just the authenticity. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That they brought to their writing, but also that the skills that I was trying to teach, they just caught right away.
I caught both authenticity and vulnerability.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to be vulnerable and share moments that are deeply personal.
Mm-hmm.
And how to share that, and now to share it with our whole Twin Cities community. I'm very grateful that we had that opportunity to hear that. In our next segment, I'd love to have you share more, Anne, about the approaches the resources, some of the exercises that allowed people to access these wonderful opportunities to share who we are and what we've learned and what we want to have be remembered. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a few short minutes. We've got some great commercials that support our show, so we would love to honor them as well. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Connections Radio Show, where we talk about ideas that matter. And we've been talking about the Southeast Seniors Project, a writing program that has been just absolutely wonderful. And to share that with us, we have Ann Sawyer. Welcome, Ann.
Hi.
And she is an artist, a storyteller, a writer, a teacher, and has been leading this project. We have Tricia with us today, and Tricia is a writer. And a wonderful writer. If you missed our first segment, go back and listen to the podcast when it's on am950radio.com. Look for Connections because it's a beautiful story.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tricia. We're so glad you're here, and thank you for sharing that beautiful story. And Rick Bernardo, my co-host, who has all sorts of websites and good things to say.
Yes, not only for me, but about our guests in particular. Ann Sawyer has a website, A-N-N-E for Ann. Sawyer, just the way it sounds, S-A-W-Y-E-R, like Tom Sawyer, but it's Ann Sawyer. And it's AnnSawyerArt.com is her website. But also, what we're talking about today is the Southeast Seniors Project. And that website is seseniors.org. SEseniors.org. And tell us a little more about that seniors organization.
Sure. Southeast Seniors is a nonprofit based in Southeast Minneapolis. It is a block nurse program. And it provides a variety of services, helping seniors to live with dignity in their homes and also enrichment. So, for example, as Tricia mentioned in the first segment, square dancing, for example, art classes, memoir classes, mindfulness classes. It's a chance for people to connect. And, you know, that's so important. When you reach a certain stage in life, a lot of people tend to find themselves becoming more isolated, more lonely. I think the shutdown during the height of the pandemic worsened that. And so everything that they're doing to make sure that people have connection with their community is really important. So I just want to give a shout out to Southeast Seniors. And I'm so grateful to them for making this project possible, this memoir project possible.
And also the grant. There was a grant that was provided.
Yes. And I should give a shout out to them. It is the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council. And they gave us funding to do this memoir project, to do the book and the podcast. So that's really important.
And one last shout out to your mom.
Yes, yes, my mom, Sally Sawyer. Sally Sawyer was the chair at one point of Southeast Seniors and volunteered for years. Her last volunteer mission, I believe, was driving a lady to the store every week to do groceries, to get groceries. And then also she was a pen pal with one of the Pratt School kids. So they have a lot of great programs.
And connections and connections.
Connections and connections.
And I'd love to hear about your approach to the memoirs, the resources that you used. And you mentioned in the last segment how you would give an assignment, you'd give, you know, some things to work on, and people just latched on and got
did.
It like right away.
They did.
Share with us that trajectory of learning, as well as, you know, what are the things that you brought and what things did you learn too in this process?
Sure. Well, I have to say from the outset that I didn't invent this approach. Of course, I went to graduate school for creative writing and also in undergraduate school. I did a lot of that and I've been writing my whole life. But the approach is that you share us an excerpt from a memoir and then something that really is honed in on what you're hoping to achieve with the exercise. And then you assign an exercise. So, for example, we had
writings from Maya Angelou and Frank McCourt and Helen Keller, Rita Moreno, Stephen King, very different and diverse writers. And
when you first shared that with me, I did laugh at the Stephen King. It's like a memoir of Stephen King kind of scares me a little bit.
Actually, it's a wonderful book that I recommend highly. It's called On Writing, and I've read it at least three times. I just love it. We would share an excerpt, and then we would have an exercise that kind of achieves. So, for example, we had one that was really trying to highlight writing from the senses. We shared a piece by Helen Keller from her memoir. And Helen Keller, as most people know, was not only blind but deaf. And her teacher, Annie Sullivan, sort of basically saved her life by teaching her how to first to communicate with hand signs, but then also how to speak and even to read.
Which ultimately is how to think in new ways.
You know, right.
Be able to bring such a perspective that she did.
Right. And so her memoir is really interesting because there's an excerpt where she talks about her – she and her teacher had gone out to a field to just study, and they decided, you know, let's climb a tree and study in the tree. A thunderstorm came, but Annie had gone back to the house to get a book or something like that. And so Helen Keller is trapped in this tree during this tremendous thunderstorm, and she describes in great detail the smell rising up from the ground as the storm came. She said there's a certain smell that, you know, and she talks about the roughness of the bark and the shaking of the tree. And so it was such a palpable, it really puts us in the scene and we feel her fear. And then we shared another writing by Brenda Euland, who is a local author, Brenda Euland. She talked about what the city of Minneapolis sounded like before cars. And how quiet it was, but then there were the sound of horses. And so we read those things, and then we had some exercises about writing from the senses, really, really putting us in the scene, grounding the reader in that, and having us feel through our senses. So the piece that we're going to share here is Karen Steele Sorensen's piece called Senses from My Childhood, and it's a really lovely piece.
When I was quite young, big holidays were at Grandma and Grandpa's. The dark oak dining room table was expanded to its maximum to get everyone in. I now have the honor of having that same table in the center of my dining room. I always laid the table at Grandma's with the dishes, glasses, and silverware. There was an old wooden oak buffet with a few squeaky drawers. It housed all of the needed items, and I became a pro at placing them. At least Grandma made me think so. Chair legs clattered and bumped each other. Finer china platters were brought down from a plate rail running all around the upper part of the dining room wall. I had the honor of sitting on a round piano stool topped with a fat Sears catalog. I had to remain very still not to fall off. The food was always plentiful and extraordinarily delicious. Juicy turkey, savory ham, and an uncle's hunted duck. Bountiful side dishes, and oh, the pies. Jars of homemade pickles were opened, as well as all of the other foods put up in glass jars in the summer. The aromas beckoned. As carefully as the food was prepared, it disappeared quickly. The dishes were scraped, metal against china, clanged and plopped into the soapy dishwater, hand-washed. Always remember, glasses first, then the flatware, followed by dishes, and finally the cooking pans. My grandmother insisted on a boiling water rinse for her dishes, so there was a whistling tea kettle in amongst all of the clinking and clattering, and finally stacking and storing. This was women's work and the opportunity for women's talk, and talk they did, only interrupted with bouts of laughter and silly screams. After the big meal, we didn't watch football. Did my grandma and grandpa even have a TV yet? My grandpa and his two brothers played violin. We sat, having overeaten and sleepily lulled to the string music. The musicians would tune their violins, carefully turning the pegs, then testing the results. I watched attentively at the perfection of the strike of the violin bow. The violin players would take a break, and a dozen or so of us would play parlor games, sitting in a large circle and being led by a relative for a new game they had just learned. Raucous laughter followed particularly by the ants who traveled a distance from a city. Someone played the piano, and then more violins.
What a beautiful story. I went back, as we talked about Rick in the last segment, going back and having a similar experience. I'm back in Fairmont, Minnesota with my grandma and setting the table. And although we had watermelon pickles that grandma had made and storytelling and not music, but wonderful how someone else's clear and specific and noticing things that as a child you notice can flood back for each of us.
I'm still not. I don't want to touch anything because my hands are trying to stay away from that boiling water rinse of the dishes. And I'm like, whoa.
And it's funny that you said, because I remember my grandmother teaching me how to wash dishes, and she didn't believe in dishwashers. And that was just – dishwashers were not what you – you just didn't do that. And there was a whole cold rinse that you did first, then you stacked. Then you did the, and then you did a boiling water hot rinse. It's like, of course. And I remember the whistle. It's like all of that. Yeah, yeah. Well, she was, and we called it supper, you know, because it wasn't dinner, or supper was when was later in the evening. Dinner was at lunchtime because she fed the farmers when she was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was all kind of the next generation after living on a farm, which is lovely. And the china, because we were there. I mean, she didn't use the china just any day.
No.
But we were there, so the time to bring the china out. When you hear it, Tricia, what do you hear in your friend's story?
It brings back a lot of childhood memories, especially the process of washing the dishes. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten about that. And most of the time when I do dishes at home, I do them by hand. And you remember, it's just automatic, you know. You don't remember that you were taught this when you were a child. Glasses first.
I've taught my husband. Yeah. I've taught my husband, like, no, that's not how we do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to do the glasses, and then you also need to, whatever you're eating with, so the utensils have to go next. And then the very last are the and I don't do dishwashers either. I can hear my Pearl Ivy Catlin Fitz. I can hear her going, no, we don't do dishwashers. That's not going to make them clean.
In the class, when Anne was had us to read the pieces first, the short pieces, and then she would instruct us to incorporate, you know, the visual and the senses and the smells. And it seemed like it was going to be so difficult. You know, we'd go home with a homework assignment and, you know, thinking, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. And I remember this one lady in the class, she was my ride, and she'd pick me up and we'd leave the class, and she'd say, I don't write like this. That's not the way I write. And she felt it was really going to be hard. But on the last day, she told Anne she was so grateful because we were all incorporating all these things that she had taught us, you know, put the smells in, put the sounds in. And I didn't grow up here in Minnesota. So listening to the stories from the other women talk about the cobblestone streets, you know, in Dinky Town, and I didn't know any of that, but I pictured it all, you know, from just hearing their stories. Yeah.
And it must have been very fun for you as well, Anne, to see how folks picked up so willingly and lovingly in sharing their story.
I was just so honored. I really, I just loved coming to class and teaching it. It was such a delightful spot in my day. And I just continue to feel good about it. When I got the proofs of the book, The Galleys, and I was telling Tricia just how wonderful it was to see all this body of work that came from such a short period of time from these wonderful writers.
And one more shout out. My gosh, the audio is beautiful.
Barry Madore.
Barry Madore.
Yeah, Barry Madore. Wonderful sound.
And that last piece was from Karen Steele Sorensen?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And she's on the board of Southeast Seniors and also a participant. So,
well, beautiful job. And a gift not only to each other but to our audience and to me. So thank you for having storytelling and allowing us to imagine and go so many different places. In our next segment, we're going to come back and think about some assignments you can give me and our audience in terms of how do we think about writing for ourselves and what can memoirs do for our own revelation, transformation, you called it earlier, mm-hmm. For our seeking of what it meant and what it means now. So stay with us because we have assignments for you. So you'll have things to think of, homework and projects to do. And we'll be right back after some commercials. Everyone to Connections Radio Share, where we just keep talking and we talk about ideas that matter. And we have a great conversation going today about Southeast Seniors and a wonderful project that Ann Sawyer has led in terms of writing and exploring people's experiences and bringing them to life through storytelling. And she's done a beautiful job throughout her life bringing stories to life in many different ways, through puppetry, through song, through stories, through imagination. So we're delighted to have Ann Sawyer with us today.
Thank you.
And she has brought Tricia, and Tricia is a writer who has participated in the project. Welcome, Tricia.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your insights and your stories today. It's been great. And Rick Bernardo, who has invited Anne and has a relationship with Anne from way back at the...
In the Heart of the Beast Heart Theater the Beast. Is where we crossed paths.
In Powderhorn Park?
Yeah, it's a wonderful area. It's nothing like going to work and seeing a pile of 58 swans on the floor. Like they're migrating to a storage, somebody said. But Anne Sawyer, A-N-N-E Sawyer art.com is the one website. But there's going to be more about this, I'm sure, on seseniors.org. That's the Southeast Seniors website, seseniors.org.
And we've been talking about the Southeast Seniors, and they're going to be having a podcast and a book coming out in late May.
Yes, May 29th is our launch date.
How exciting.
Very
we get
excited.
The preview.
Yeah, yeah.
And Anne has been sharing about the process of developing these stories with her seniors through Southeast Seniors and the wisdom that you can share when you have had a full life, I think is exciting. You know, sometimes I see memoirs coming out with 20-year-olds, and I'm like, oh, no, you haven't lived yet.
Exactly.
I'm not going to read this.
Oh.
So, I'll read it when you're 60-plus, because that's what a memoir should be, a reflection on, I think, a full trajectory of experience. So tell us about our final piece that you're going to be sharing today.
Yes. So the final piece that we would like to share is by Darla Wexler. And the prompt that we had was we read an excerpt from Mary Carr's memoir. The piece was, or the prompt was, it was an ordinary day when X happened. And the piece that Mary Carr had, the little bit, was about they were coming back from a shopping trip, her mother and her sister. This was in Texas. And
suddenly they saw this cloud of copper-colored things coming at them. And then suddenly their car was just swarmed by locusts. It just came out of nowhere. They were just, their car was covered with locusts. There were locusts in the car. They were freaking out and trapped in this car with all these bugs. And then as suddenly as they had come, they were gone. And there was nothing left but like squashed bugs and all this. And so that was a prompt for people. It was an ordinary day when X happened. And so Darla took that and wrote this piece called Vietnam Era.
Another fellow transverser of this perilous journey into adulthood was my main friend all through junior and senior high. We sat together for 1.5 hour bus rides each way into town for school. He figured out that we should be handed a full high school diploma and a half of a bus riding diploma because it took us 3 hours on the bus and 6 hours in class. Larry Gilbertson knew me so well. He'd tell me what he thought with brave honesty. He didn't mince words. He just wanted what was best for me. He headed to the U of M too, and we hung out a lot. Thankfully, my nursing school curriculum did not leave much debate over what to take as far as classes, but the whole social scene with dorm life and young men hovering and living in the only co-ed dorm on campus in 1964, it certainly made for inner turmoil and insecurity surfacing. And then there was the draft. It drove the fate of our lives and changed its trajectory for many. Canada, or a conscientious objector, or succumb to the inevitable draft, ROTC, protest, march, or enlist early to get a pick at a safer area of service. The rules for deferment changed by the day with all the fallen soldiers needing replacement. Some boys approached it with a passivity and some by plan, but it affected all. At first, a full-time college enrollment meant deferment. Then it took being married. Then it took being married and having a kid. All those changes happened within a year and a half. We were running out of young men to send into battle in 1968. Personally, I met and fell head over heels with my wonderful husband, Dick. I finished my BS degree in nursing, passed the dreaded state boards, and spent tons of time with so many new friends who have become our lifelong second family. Our days took on a rhythm of normalcy.
And thank you for bringing that piece. And again, it brings up, you know, when you have a good piece, it opens up your own memories. Thinking back at the University of Minnesota campus and my brother, it was out in California getting his medical degree through military support. And my cousin was on campus in 68 and he was ROTC Navy. It was a strange time. I can see why the locust was a prompt for that.
Yeah. And what the trajectory of that story is that, and we just, it was too long for us to share entirely in this segment, but it was an ordinary day for her when she found out that this friend of hers, Larry Gilbertson, was killed. Mm-hmm. He did go to Vietnam and he was one of the fallen. So, it was a really moving piece, and I was really amazed that she was willing to share that with everyone. He sang at their wedding, and it was a very sad piece, but also very moving.
And to honor that day as being a loss, but also a memory of the depth of connection that she had with him. I know that it never leaves my husband's brother died in Vietnam, and his mother was never the same. It just, when you lose a child, you just aren't the same. And it was sudden for her as well. You know, again, like the locust, it comes from nowhere.
Right.
It was a beautiful analogy for that, or metaphor for that, that it was there and then it was gone. But the loss,
yeah,
the loss stays with us in ways, but perhaps opens up a new way of thinking about it.
And it seems important. Like this is what this is all about: is honoring people's stories, and those stories are honoring other stories in turn. As we honor those stories in turn, and it's not quite a circle, but it's some sort of amazing spiral through time. I'm dating myself, but I'd miss the draft for Vietnam by this much, and and I'm still thinking back only when I try to all the people who were just a year older than me that maybe never came back or were never the same after being in Vietnam.
So as you're creating these prompts and pieces like this are created, share some that our audience may want to be thinking about to just give a try. I mean, they've heard stories today and very moving, very a nice variety of approaches to the stories. What sort of things should someone be thinking about when they're creating a memoir or at least a memory that they want to talk about?
Well, a couple of tips. One is to read good writers. That, you know, there are so many wonderful memoir writers out there. And Mary Carr, the person who authored the Locust piece, has a book called The Art of Memoir, which I highly recommend. Stephen King's On Writing, of course, is wonderful. Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings is just a phenomenal piece if you want to have somebody who, you know, can place you, really put you. It's like living it when you read her work. And I know that you mentioned, Tricia, that Maya Angelou's book was very influential on you. You mentioned that when we read that in class.
Tell me a little bit more about that for you, Tricia.
Well, it was one of the authors that I was familiar with when, you know, she was had us to read different memoirs in the class. And I had recently read some pieces on Maya Angelou. And one thing that helped me to write was when she gave an assignment, we all have a story in us. We all have a book in us. And so to get started, I would start by writing the assignment. I would say, okay, Anne said that she wants us to write a story about It Was an Ordinary Day. So as I'm writing that down, then the thought of the story starts to come to me, and then I can go into the story. Okay, well, this happened to me, and now I can write about this. So that was my way of getting started.
I love that. I read one time that when we have an assignment in school or whatever, if you can read it, and then when you're reading it, say it out loud, and then have someone else say it, and you can hear it, it actually gets put in different parts of the brain.
Yeah.
And so when you were writing it in that tactile, probably another part of the brain was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Here's some things to think about.
There's a wonderful writer and comic book artist, Linda Berry, who teaches at the University of Wisconsin now, which is where I went to undergraduate school. And she does a lot of work with the hand and brain connection. And she works with scientists who, you know, they can look at your brain while you're actually creating or writing and that kind of thing and see how it changes. So there is a really powerful connection between, you know, it's one thing to say it out loud and it's another thing to write with your hand. Exactly. And you're going to get different results when you do that.
And I think there's different results that are still good when you're on the computer.
Sure.
Because you're using both hands. I think there's something about the integration of the left and the right brain when you're using both hands. So,
and that's probably why music, when you engage in singing or playing an instrument, it's engaging all of that. And there's actually a music to the human voice, just with spoken word, that engages parts of our brains, at least some of mine.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and I just want to make sure that we do one more time the websites, and a special thanks to our guests today. So I'll let you do the websites first.
Website for Southeast Seniors is just seseniors.org, and actually they're going to have a reception in late May on the 29th, so there'll probably be something on the website about that. And Ann Sawyer's Ann Sawyer Art, Ann with an E at the end, .com. Go there because there's a multiplicity of things.
And Ann Sawyer, thank you for joining us today. I was teasing her at the beginning of the show. I kind of see her as like another co-host here. So she's always welcome to come back and bring her guests and talk to us about all the wonderful art you're doing. So a big thank you to you, Anne.
Thank you so much.
And Tricia, thank you. Thank you for joining us on the radio today and having a good conversation.
And thank you so much for having me. This was delightful, an experience that a first.
And, oh, yeah.
And I'm just happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Such a pleasure. I loved hearing your story, and I loved hearing your insights throughout the show as well. I think that the hope of the world, I believe, rests on sharing stories.
Yeah.
And the more that we connect through understanding each other's stories and honoring those stories is the hope for a world that can be more connected and perhaps be at more peace and love.
I believe that with all my heart.
There's a saying that our culture is defined by the stories we tell.
And I also believe if we all got around a great big table and had a good meal and shared stories, we'd all be happier people.
Amen. Yeah, amen.
Those are connections. Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you for joining us today. I hope you write some things and think about your own story and be willing to share that story with others because that's how we're going to all get connected. So thank you for all that you do as well. And we look forward to having you join us next week on Connections Radio Show.